That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, here we go.
What's going on? You're listening to the Film Drunk Frogcast, coming at you not live from our frog quarters to yours. I'm Vince Mancini. I am joined by my co-host. You know him, you love him. He's the irregular regular, Mr. Matt Lieb.
Something lums my both butt cheeks. Oh, shit. I couldn't think of one in time. I was really scrambling this morning. This is, it's not technically a morning. It's noon on the West Coast, but for me,
it's morning.
It's morning. Yeah. I know I have a child, and I know there's a bunch of, parent police out there are like, what are you doing sleeping in till noon? I'm not sleeping until noon. My body physically doesn't wake up until about 2 o'clock.
That's right. Alex, just to get you into the spirit of the show, Matt always, when I introduce him, he does a parody song and he turns it into like an analingus themed song in some way.
Yeah. So I've invented an onomatopoeia for eating butt. It's lum. And so there's a lot of lore.
That's so stupid.
Because I immediately went lum 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 lum.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, you know, it makes sense if you, you know, say it out loud. But then once you do it, you feel bad. Who's our guest today?
I feel terrible.
That's right. We today, very special guest. Guy I've been listening to and reading for a long time, Alex Goldman of the Western Kabuki podcast, and I believe your Substack is called The Cool Dude Zone.
That's correct.
Nice to have you.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Stoked to have you on. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, we all watched Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, well, I can't speak for you guys. I did. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't. No, I'm kidding. I saw it. This is my first time seeing it, so I have a lot of thoughts. Vince, I assume you've seen it because you're Mr. Movie Guy.
I definitely watched it around the time it came out, and I think I was like big into Dracula around this time.
Yeah.
When this came out, I think I was Dracula for like 4 Halloweens running.
You were Dracula pilled.
I definitely got Dracula pilled. But this was Brendan's idea. He was like, "Hey, we should watch Dracula."
That's right.
And we were like, "Sure." And then like 10 minutes before filming, he's like, "Hey, my kids." He has 3 children, so all he has to say is "my kids,"
and we all go,
"I mean, it's very convenient."
I know. What an excuse. If I had 3 kids,
it's definitely the reason I don't socialize anymore. So
yeah, no, same. It's getting bad. I have like this text message from a friend of mine who I think about every day. I think like I really need to text them back, but I'm just like, but who has the time? it's so rude.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
But I can't help it because I'm just like, I could do that, or I could shut my eyes for a little bit until my child is home from daycare.
That's exactly right.
That's my
exactly
life.
Right.
Alex, how old are your children, if you don't mind me asking?
They are 6 and 9.
Nice.
Yeah, I know. I had them that way deliberately.
Yeah. You were just like, oh, I can't fucking wait. One day I'll be able to say nice.
I'm gonna be able to make the best joke.
people are gonna love it. Everyone's gonna laugh. That's cool.
I have a 2.5-year-old, an 11-year-old, and an 11-year-old stepson, and I always ask the fellow parents, like, what is your trait that you'd like forgotten about yourself that you see reflected most often in your children?
Well, I mean, I have terrible ADHD, and now as a person with terrible ADHD, I have to deal with someone with terrible ADHD. It sucks. Let me tell you, I did not realize how annoying I am until I had a kid who like absolutely cannot focus. I have to do a thing whenever I actually need him to do something, whenever I actually need him to register that I'm talking to him, I have to put my hand over a screen. I have to hold his head in my hands and make him look directly at me and say, "Hey, bud, you listening?" And that is when I can get his attention.
Oh, yeah.
So
we have that exact same thing. Basically, we just have to like pause the TV and then like grab him by the shoulders and be like, Hey, over here. Hey,
Vince, you're, for the people who are listening, who's everyone since no one is watching, the motion you're doing is shaking a kid to death.
No, I was just like turning his shoulders manually.
It looked
it was shaking to death.
It looked a lot like shaking someone to death.
My child also loves to be shaken. Like
he's into it. It's fine, guys.
No,
he does.
He asks for it. He goes, and then I shake him and it like makes his voice vibrate. Yeah. And he just goes more.
He thinks it's hilarious when I put a bar of soap in a sock and hit him with it. He thinks it's so funny. Don't worry, guys.
Oh, you don't code red your child?
I do not. I love my children. By children, I mean child. Listen, I have one child, okay? So I have the least amount of children's on this podcast. And I've come to the point now where I've just received so many warnings from all of my podcast friends that I'm like, I guess I shouldn't have another child, because it sounds like even harder than having one child is like having multiple children. Is that true?
There's some kind of exponential increase in work.
So
I don't know how.
It's not even double. It's like worse than double.
It's worse than double, I believe. And I don't know how that works. Like, I don't know why that happened, but that happened. And like, it's fine. I love my son and my daughter. I can handle it. But it's like, you have to prepare yourself for more than double the amount of work. It's
That's
just
crazy.
A lot
crazy.
I met a person with triplets once, and I was like, wow, like that has got to be, I mean, when you have multiples, when you're not intending to have multiples, and then you just have like three kids, boom, like all at once, like, whew.
Yeah.
One of my old coworkers had twins, and it was like, anytime the one was satisfied, the other one was like,
yes,
was helpless and needed something. And
that
I was
is,
like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't envy you in the slightest.
My sister had twins, and that's exactly, they keep switching. Like, they keep basically, like, one will be totally calm, and I'll be like, wow, look at that, little angel. And then the other one will see that and be like, my turn to fuck shit up. Hey, mom, time to ruin your life. And it's like, but you were the good one. They keep switching, and it's almost like telepathically know to.
I always forget that you're a twin, and your sister has twins. Were you like worried that that was going to happen? Was that like a
I assumed that the twin thing was more likely with a girl eggs than a boy sperms, because if boy sperms made twins,
yeah,
then I feel like, you know, I don't know. It just felt like that wasn't possible. Like, I was like, I don't think it's like
just logically.
Yeah, logically it felt like, I don't think the sperms are in there. Like, I'm a split an egg or whatever, you know. I don't know about science,
no,
but I know enough to think that that's got to be inside of the eggs. Anyway,
I also have no clue on this. You can't ask me.
I just assume.
Alex, I was reading your Substack a while back, and I think you're writing about how like hard it was to get like new podcast projects off the ground and just like what the industry is like. And that was sort of shocking to read, like coming from you, because I don't know, there's like, you seem like you're in like the top 10 of like people that are well known for like just podcasts and you know,
nothing like, else. I'm not for any, and for no other thing.
Well, at least I also have a theory. when like famous people do a podcast, like who are famous before podcasting, like I don't want to listen to it because I feel like celebrities podcasting is like stolen valor.
Absolutely.
In a way.
I've also never really heard an interesting one. Sorry, no. Office ladies. I'm just not feeling it. But yeah, it's a pretty bad time right now for podcasts, in my opinion.
Yeah.
As a person who has tried for about 2 years to get something off the ground. And I mean, I finally have, so to speak. It hasn't started yet, but it'll be starting in a couple months. The problem is that, you know, I ended up having to completely self-fund it. Like, it wasn't a thing that I got any, like, I got a loan, but that's not the same as having a company come in and be
right.
Like, hey, we've got your back and we're going to give you health insurance. I got a loan and now I'm just kind of doing it scrappy underdog style.
It's so weird because, I mean, like, in one sense, it's, you know, like an extension of the rest of the media, which is that, you know, like everything completely fell apart in the last 2 years. But podcasts in particular are so interesting to me because, you know, we started this like, 13 years ago or something. And so, mm-hmm. like, when I started, it was like, oh, nobody wanted to put money into a podcast because like they weren't a thing yet and it wasn't like known as a thing. And then, I don't know, what was it, 2016, 2017 maybe? Like everybody was like, oh, let's put a ton of money into podcast. And then like it just seems like it went from let's everyone do this to no one does this anymore, like way faster than anything else.
Well, I blame my bosses. Sorry, bosses. I blame Gimlet, which is where I worked, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they set the precedent of having a $230 million deal with Spotify or whatever. And then Spotify didn't manage to turn that into a success. Instead, what Spotify managed to turn into success was, you know, the Dax Shepard podcast and Call Her Daddy and mm-hmm. the Joe Rogan podcast. And they were like, well, why are we hiring all of these obnoxious journalists? They're really annoying. They take too long to do anything.
They're not even smoking weed with Elon Musk.
They're not smoking weed with Elon Musk. I mean, you know, when
I mean, would you have anyone asked you? Would you have done that? Would you have smoked weed with Elon Musk?
I have a lot of questions for that guy. So yes, absolutely. If like the prerequisite for hanging out with him would be to smoke weed, in a heartbeat, I would do it.
Yeah.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Right now. If someone was like, go smoke a J with Elon Musk, I'd be like, will I be able to ask him questions afterward? Even
right.
if they weren't recorded, that's how badly I want to know.
that's how many questions I have.
What questions would you ask? Would you be like, did you so love posting that you were willing to give up like the entire sheen of being a smart guy in order to keep posting?
I mean, I have questions about like his self-regard. I have questions about like some of the sort of weirder peccadilloes that are reported about him, like that he flouts safety laws in his factories because he hates the color yellow, so he won't put any yellow
yep.
markings anywhere. So no one knows what to be cautious about and people constantly hurt themselves.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, this color is too ugly and loud. It's like, yeah, that's kind of why they did that.
Yeah, that's right. The whole reason for it, bud.
Yeah. And also, isn't things being ugly and loud kind of your thing? It's like he doesn't want to compete yeah. with yellow.
Right. That sounds right.
I had a good like Cybertruck in the wild moment yesterday, which I don't have very often because I live in Fresno, so it's not like as much of an issue as it is here as in like the Bay Area. But
right.
yeah, just mm-hmm. just jarring every single time.
I mean, I know that I'm childish, but I did flip off the last Cybertruck I saw just to let them know that, like, hey, you bought into something that, like, you shouldn't have. This
yeah.
is not a good thing.
Yeah. It's you know, it's letting whoever's in there who feels good about it, let them know that they shouldn't, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's
I
kind
don't
of,
know.
It's a protest.
I don't even know if Elon was had gone full conservative by the time he had designed the Cybertruck, but it is like the perfect conservative vehicle, because it's like you buy it partly because it's like performative,
right?
Performative, like owning the libs,
right.
And then everybody reacts to that, and then you get to complain about it and be like an aggrieved minority of Tesla owners.
It's kind of a perfect plan in that sense, because it's like,
that's
you
a
know,
very good point. I'd never even considered
it,
that.
It makes you into a target of the libs, the very libs who you already hate, and you just go, see this? You know, they hate us because they ain't us, like, immediately.
Well, it's, the whole thing is you're saying fuck your feelings, but in order for, like, you to have that, thought, like, someone has to express a feeling that you don't like.
You gotta make them express a feeling.
Yes, you have to wag the dog a little bit.
Right. Yeah. No. I like the existence of the Cybertruck, because it's bringing back the feelings of my youth when the PT Cruiser came out, and we all as a nation. Mm. We said, like, we're all gonna hate this car, right, guys? And we're like, yeah.
Can I admit something?
Oh, tell me.
I liked the PT Cruiser.
I thought it was kind of okay, honestly.
Yeah.
I didn't know why.
I was like, this car doesn't look like other cars, and I like that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what the Cybertruck is like. That's the big selling point of the Cybertruck for people who aren't. You know,
that feels like it's trying too hard to not look like other cars.
I agree.
Okay, we don't need to make the wheels out of squares. Like, you're taking it too far.
Honestly, the whole Cybertruck thing wouldn't be an issue beyond the PT Cruiser thing if it didn't also, like, maim people.
Sure.
Like,
right. Yeah.
Like, if Tesla's didn't seem like just like dedicated to accidentally locking someone in till they die.
Hey, say what you will about Elon Musk. He did kill Mitch McConnell's sister.
I know. That was kind of cool of him.
Did he?
Yeah.
Yeah. His sister-in-law got trapped in a Tesla, and she couldn't figure out how to, like, get it to open. And, like, she accidentally backed into a pond, I think, on his property, I want to say.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And she was, like, texting people, like, hey, I'm, like, stuck in my Tesla. I'm drowning. And was, like, trying to call people. And, like, they didn't find her in time. And she drowned.
It's actually horrifying. Like,
no,
horrifying.
It's terrible.
It's, like, one of the most horrifying deaths I can imagine. At the same time, it is also like one of those things where I'm just like, there's a perfect storm of culture war, political bullshit happening to make this happen. You know, you've got to have Elon
and
Musk.
And just the tech industry that designs things that like look cool, but don't actually improve the user interface, like they do the user interface where it's like, oh, like it has go away. Like the whole thing where you're supposed to not have like a stick to put things cars in drive anymore, and everything's supposed to be a button on a touchscreen.
I'm so tired.
It's like a terrible idea.
Yes,
for
it doesn't
moving
work.
Vehicles.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
It's stressful. It feels very unsafe.
The whole point of buttons is that you can operate them without like looking down, which is what you want in a car. Like
you can
need to
touch
know,
them and feel them based on the feel. You know what button you're doing. It's incredible that needs to be explained to people. In the process of building a touchscreen car, you're just like, well, just drive it.
drive it
and be like, oh, I see our big problem here. Like, instead they're like, nah, keep making them.
Well, one of the reasons they did that is that touchscreens are cheaper to produce than like having, having all the dials and buttons and levers.
Oh, okay.
We're all going to just die in our iPhone car, and that sucks.
Yep. Yeah, on the phone with tech support, who's actually just like
an AI chat.
And you can't reach human.
You're like, I'm drowning. And it's like, I understand that this must be very stressful for you.
Please choose one of these 10 options, none of which are I am drowning, come save me.
Para español, primo número dos.
So my bank recently replaced its old, like, knowledge base or support base or whatever with the
The chat function that's an AI?
Like the AI chat.
Yeah.
And the result, in my experience, has been that it gives you the same answers but takes about 3 times as long because it has to upload it to whatever massive supercomputer they're using to, you know, use the, you know, organic chat that AI is supposed to use. So, not great. Not a great decision by them.
Yeah. It's the fact that it's happening already is insane to me. Like this technology like just came out and it, and they're immediately like, okay, fire any human who works in support. Customer service will now be purely AI. And it sucks.
And it does not work yet. So I'm like back in, I want to say like between 2015 and 2018, like this was the period when like venture capital was throwing like all this money at media companies. And I worked for one that had taken all this like venture capital money and I went and I always worked off site. I lived in San Francisco for most of my like writing career and we had offices in LA and I think we got opened like a New York one at some point in there. And I went and visited like the UpRock's offices around that time and there was just full of all these people and like this had gone from a company where you know we had like a tech guy and an owner and then a series of writers and I sort of knew everybody that worked there to all of a sudden there was just like a room full of people and I was like I have no idea what everyone in here does or how that makes us money in any way. Like was there any situation like that at Gimlet where you could sort of see where the money had gone and were I don't know, confused by it?
I mean, not like just in my day to day, not really. Like I was just in my little office making my show, not paying attention to anyone else. Later on, I found out, well, I read an article that was written by Max Tani, who works at Semaphore, which is, it's a bunch of like expats from other places.
And then we've had Dave Weigel on here before.
Okay.
He's at Semaphore now.
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead. Go inside. Sorry. My plumber's here. not my plumber. My landlord's plumber.
Of course.
Yeah.
What's it called? He wrote an article that was like, what happened at Spotify? And there were like a lot of details that like, I didn't really know. Cause like I said, I was like not part of the brain trust. I wasn't making the executive decisions. One of the things that I didn't know is there's a woman named Dawn Ostroff who cut her teeth at, I think, Viacom. She was like old media.
Right.
She was real old media, but was also a big investor in NFTs and was pushing really hard to make a Bored Apes podcast. Oh, that was like a big thing for her. Was that she really wanted to have the Bored Apes podcast be a Spotify production. And like apparently it was like, and it's just a sentence in the story, but like what a sentence
to be. Yeah.
You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Oh, Bored Apes.
We've had
Yacht Club NFT podcast. It's just it's like a word cloud of the biggest virgin in the world.
We've had our friend Justin Halpern, who's like a producer on Abbott Elementary now, but he like had people like trying to do meetings with him to create a Bored Ape television show. Like that was like a big thing where some people were just giving out money to be like, please turn this into something. Please help our pump and dump scheme. Please pump this.
Yeah.
So I'm really sad that I didn't, you know, that I didn't get to be a colleague of the Bored Apes.
Yeah, I know. It would have been the best Christmas parties. You get to go on their yacht.
Seriously.
Their cartoon yacht.
Yeah. I think that you have to pay to be in the club.
It sucks.
You just get to go on the yacht.
I thought that was part of the deal, that you just bought an NFT and you got invited to the yacht parties.
Yeah. Like I said, you have to pay and those things are expensive.
Oh, sure. But I was, you know, if your company acquired one, maybe you'd get like, I don't know, grandfathered into the yacht party.
I don't know, Alex. You ever heard of the concept you got to spend money to make money?
I mean, I'm hearing of it for the first time right now.
Okay. Really, well, let me tell you what this really concept exciting. Means. It means when you buy a picture of ape, you'll make money eventually.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay. Cool.
I'm bankrupt.
I am curious that like what happens. I mean, when you have your kind of track record where you're like, okay, I've produce like one of the most like successful podcasts out there. Like, what are people telling you when they're like, yeah, we don't want to give you money to make a podcast?
Oh, you know, I mean, when I was talking to the big wigs, they would give me the vaguest, most ridiculous, non-answers. They'd be like, well, you gotta
spend money to make money.
Basically, no, they'd be like, well, it's just not, doesn't make sense for our portfolio right now. And what they would tell me is, they'd be like, well, do you have a budget? And I'd say yes, and I'd give them a budget, usually a really ridiculous one, because I didn't want to undersell what I want to do, and I'm a reporter. I need money to make a thing. It takes time to make it. So I was like, you know, this is going to be expensive. Yeah. If you actually want it to be a good thing that people like, people know me for doing like long, in-depth reported stuff. If you want me to make long, in-depth reported stuff, you have to give me the money and the time to do it.
Yes.
And they'd be like, meh, no, we'll get Dax Shepard.
Dax Shepard's just going to talk about stuff. It's all good.
He has a built-in audience, and you know, all we have to do is give him, you know, a couple million dollars, and we know that we will have him,
like, right?
Which makes sense.
I wanted.
And what does that money go to if you're Dax Shepard? You just build like another pool
house? Goes to your it goes to like vacations for your family.
Yeah, well, that's cool. That's nice. But then you can talk about those vacations on your podcast, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, forever content. That's what happens.
I've never listened to a celebrity podcast.
I'm talking shit about a thing I've never listened to.
No, same. And then I feel like that's fine. I think that's the correct.
I'm trying to think if I ever actually have. I guess I will occasionally watch clips of Conan doing his podcast, but that doesn't feel the same, because this is like. Podcasting feels, you know, late night show adjacent for him, because of the, you know, the structure of the interview and stuff that he would do on it. I don't know. It just works for him in a more natural thing. It doesn't feel like that. I've never actually listened to, I guess I've never tried listening to people who are already famous talking about stuff podcasts, mostly because I just I have no interest in just starting a podcast at random.
Right.
You know, it's like, and I think this is probably one of the biggest problems with podcasts.
Well, I do if it's reported.
If it's what? Like reported?
If it's a reported podcast that has like a topic.
Oh, yeah, sure, sure. Of course. I guess what I mean is like, you know, why would I listen to, like, something would have to draw me to the Dax Shepard Experience or whatever the fuck it's called, or like the, you know,
I mean, he talks about, he's a big car guy. If you're into cars,
a celebrity that does a show about cars, is this has this been tried before?
Someone needs to
I don't know if it's about cars. I do know that he likes cars.
He just, sure.
He occasionally talks, you know, it's actually kind of a wonder that Jay Leno has not started a podcast.
Oh, seriously. Just to spite Conan. Honestly.
Yeah, exactly. Like exactly. Just to spite him, just to be like, I'm always going to steal your audience.
That's a solid impression.
You were talking about, you know, what happened at Spotify. I don't know if we finished that with the old media woman who liked NFTs and whatnot. How did what happened from there? Like, how much do you think like her coming from old media / loving NFTs led to its eventual downfall, or do you think that's related?
I mean, I think that the NFT thing is mostly just like a funny anecdote to
right.
me. I think that I think that not really understanding the thing that they bought,
yes,
is what did them in, because they were like, oh, cool, these people make award-winning podcasts, and then found out like, oh, that actually comes with like a significant personnel burden, and they need money to do things. And also, tech companies are really do not like journalists in any capacity.
Yeah.
Like, really, it's like just part of the culture is to not trust journalists, think that they are going to, you know, talk shit about you or mess up your company or whatever.
Yeah.
And so they didn't like us. They thought we were nuisances. And to be fair, we are.
Yes.
That's our job.
Yeah.
That's like, I mean, what they bought.
It's so funny because it's like the, you know, the Elon fans and that sort of tech industry, like the tech industry people, like the people that are like super, you know, within that system and are sort of the like startup culture, hustle, grind, blah, blah, blah. Like that entire cohort, like they're convinced that like that tech journalists are so unfair to the tech industry and they're only like looking to tear it down. And it's like, I can't think of an industry that has had more, that has had a more like glorifying like puff,
right.
like the tech journalists are by far the worst offenders of just, you know, like taking some founder's opinion and writing it up and you know.
Oh yeah, right. It's terrible. And also, you know, they got, you know, from the start of Twitter and Facebook, like 2006 to like 2013, they just got a free pass. No one knew what it was they were making. So everybody was like, oh, this is really cool. This is a great new thing. This is a wonderful thing that's happening. And only afterward, when they found out that they were like actively suppressing studies that said that the thing they made was like harmful to children.
Yeah.
People were like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe they're not so great. Maybe they're just trying to make money like everybody else. And they're not trying to connect all of us.
Yeah, yeah. Like the Elon thing is like, oh man, what could he do without all these, you know, people trying to tear him down? It's like, dude, this guy would not exist without you guys hanging from his balls for like the better part of a decade. Like
You know, one of the things, I don't know if you have a relationship with this person. If you do, feel free to edit this out. Kara Swisher, who is a opinion journalist.
No,
we don't have
I saw the cover of her book and it made me want to puke. That's all.
She spent a decade of her career just like shamelessly puffing people up and writing articles that are like Elon Musk is the future of cool or whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then wrote a book that was, I think she thought it was an apology, but it just read as like a person being like, no one knew any better.
Right.
How also, would we have possibly known?
It's called fucking Burn Book, and there's like, and the cover has her wearing like sunglasses with something burning behind it, where it's like, okay, clearly the subtext of this is how cool you are.
Yeah.
Right. The subtext of this is how you are going to, how you're like not going to hold back. But
yeah,
it's too late. You held back when it actually mattered.
Yeah. I'm not afraid to burn bridges. Like, okay. Yeah. Now you're not good.
Now that you've got that like opinion writer at New York Times money. Yeah.
Yeah. Kara Swisher, I knew that her entire thing was, I don't know, I guess ego-based. And not that, you know, I'm not, obviously, listen, we're all ego-based. But I knew that she was all cap when I saw that she was hosting the Succession podcast, the After the Show podcast, official HBO one. And and my friend who worked on that, who will remain nameless, was like, the worst part about it was just Kara Swisher interviewing random like CEOs, and they couldn't watch the show beforehand, so they wouldn't. They would only talk about a little bit about the synopsis of the show. So they, because there's like, you know, what do they call that, Vince, when you can't get a screener early? I don't know. It's they couldn't. It was so
embargoed.
Yeah, embargoed. So it was like, yeah. but they even embargoed like the press screenings of the show for whatever reason, at least for her. And they still were just like, no, but she's got to be the main character of this podcast. I just was like, this is. I'm sorry, but this whole Kara Swisher industry thing feels like a huge front. It all just seemed
there's a constant accusation that's being levied on TikTok by young music fans. They call every artist they don't like industry plants.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she's an industry plant.
Yes, 100%. 100%.
I just feel like she's an industry plant.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, of the people that I know that worked in media, like 85% of them have gotten laid off in the last 2 or 3 years. And like the only ones who haven't, whose careers seem to be like going great and are the ones that literally just like retype press releases from tech companies and be like, oh, so-and-so might IPO and merge with blah, blah, blah. And it's like literally they're just on the phone with a tech CEO and type whatever they say.
Well, I mean, the thing that was very embarrassing is that we were a tech show, right?
And right.
We would occasionally do stories that butted up against Spotify, and they never once granted us an interview.
Wow.
And I'm just like, guys, do you know how embarrassing it is to have to go on our show and be like, Spotify, our bosses, we walked down the hall and they declined to comment. Like, it sucks. It's really embarrassing. It makes us seem like clowns, but you know, it also makes them seem like clowns.
Yeah. I don't think they're aware of that though. Like, you'd think if you understood how media or anything works, like when you're offered the opportunity to, you know, answer for a story, like you would want to be out there and tell your own story. But like the response is always like, oh no, don't say anything about it. Like, don't, yeah.
Yeah. And they wonder why they have such bad reputations.
Yeah. I remember when, at least with this, the podcast industry all started, like the bubble burst. It was bursting around the time that my wife and I were pitching this show. My wife, and we were able to get a contract from American Public Media, and I was like, you know, we had sold the show, and I was like, oh, this is great. And it was, you know, similar to your show, Alex, in that it was going to require a lot of like money and research and time. It was like, it's one of those things where I was like, well, this show is what I would consider a full-time job. So the pay I assumed would be at least, you know, in line with what people get paid to, I don't know, let's say teach.
Oh no.
And when we got like the terms of, you know, like basically you know the contract, how much money we would get, I looked and I was like, not only is it a pittance, but it's also split between me and my wife. And I was like, what the fuck?
And yeah, you guys are an entity. You don't get to pay to separate employees for that.
Yeah, and the craziest thing about it was at one point we had a call before the contract that we kind of assumed was like, because we'd got an email that essentially told us it was a green light, and we thought it was like, you know, a green light call, an onboarding call. The call, the crux of it with the higher ups at American Public Media was, so how would we make money off of this? And I was like, what? I don't
know.
That's
your job, dude.
I don't know.
That's literally your job.
Isn't that your job to figure that out? And I just started going into like, well, I was like, well, on my podcast, in which I opened with a parody song about eating assholes, what we do is we have a Patreon. So I guess bonus episodes and, I don't know, ads. Like, I didn't know what to tell them. And it was just so strange. And they still, you know, they were like, okay. So they added like some bonus episodes to like the contract in terms of what we'd be obligated to do. And even that was just, it was crazy. I was like, oh man, I didn't know it was over. Like, you know, I thought people were still getting paid to do
this. Isn't your entire function to sell ads and come up with like the, you know, the cost that you're going to get back for those ads and divvy out the proceeds to it? That's kind
of... Isn't it at the very least part of the calculus of what shows you green light? Like if you say yes to a show, I assume it's because you're like, I see a way to make money off of this.
I would say that the moment that I realized things were really bad, I was... I got asked to like be the host of a pilot, and I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. I'll host a pilot. So I hosted the pilot, and they're like, okay, cool. We're going to go try and sell this to all of these big companies and we'll follow up with you. It took maybe 6 months, and they got back to me and were like, hey, listen, everyone passed on it. And I was like, okay. They were like, but we still really believe in this and we want to make it. It's just, the thing is, we're a small production company. We don't have the money to make that, like, we don't have the money to make a big production. So what we want to do is start out really scrappy, and we can then, like, as we start selling ads and making money, we can revisit cash. And I was like, okay, fine. Sounds great. And they're like, we're prepared to offer you $250 an episode.
And oh my, I was like, God.
And I wrote back, and I was like, guys, like, I know that this is not what you're trying to do, and you are just trying to, like, make success where you can find it. But this is, like, anyone would be insulted by this.
Yes.
This is what you've done is insulted me.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't appreciate it. And I don't want anything to do with this. I wrote them back and was like, I'll do it for $1,500 an episode. And they were like, okay, we'll get back to you. And then I never heard a word from them.
Oh, God.
Spencer Hall told this story when we talked to him on the broadcast, but he was sort of in the same situation where he's like, you know, pitching his show and the thing. And he's been writing about college football for like, you know, 20 years almost. And they were at like a sold out live show for his podcast. And one of the people he was pitching it to pointed at the poster that they'd made, like the flyer for the live appearance. And they're like, see, the problem is like that guy, I don't even know who that is. And they were pointing at Nick Saban, which is like, you don't have to know about college football very much to know like who Nick Saban is.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like, there's no market for this because no one knows who this guy is.
Yeah. The people in charge of like doing any kind of like development or any kind of, you know, the people who greenlight stuff, you know, it's nobody knows what they're doing. And everyone is put in a position of being like, well, I guess because I'm in this position to please me is how I will know whether or not something is good. Does it please me? And right. Ugh, it's not good.
Yeah. So Dracula.
Speaking of bloodsuckers.
Oh, there you go.
In the industry. There we go. Summertime and the living is thirsty. At least it is in the Lieb household. And when we are trying to get hydrated, we reach for the best water on earth. Fiji water.
Fiji water is bottled at the source and untouched by man until you unscrew the cap. Fiji water really is from the islands of Fiji, 1,600 miles from the nearest continent, and it is sourced from an ancient artesian aquifer and is naturally preserved from external elements.
That's right, Vince. You can literally taste the difference. So whenever we do an ad, we sometimes get samples sent to us of whatever we're advertising. And when I first got sent Fiji water bottles in the mail, I thought it was hilarious. I was like, I've tasted water before. Why would they do this? But believe me when I say this is absolutely the best water I've ever tasted. And that's because Fiji water is a natural artesian water with 100% natural electrolytes. Unlike some other top premium bottled water brands, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring.
That's right, Matt. Fiji water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving it its signature smooth, soft taste. Fiji water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the U.S., and it has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH.
Also, Fiji water's 330 milliliter and 500 milliliter bottles are made from using 100% recycled plastic. Fiji water continues to lead the top premium bottled water competition on launching 100% recycled plastic bottles. The aquifer Fiji water originates from is a sustainable source and will continue to replenish as the rain and water cycle persists in the islands of Fiji.
So get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up today for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office. It's not just water.
It's Fiji water. Hey everyone, Matt Lieb here. If you know me, you know there's only two things in this entire world I care about more than rewatching my favorite TV shows. It's gut health and former karate champion Chuck Norris. That's why I love Morning Kick. You're probably asking, what is Morning Kick? Well, I'll tell you. It's a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Look, I live in Los Angeles, all right? And this is a city defined by its culture of people drinking green drinks. Unlike the other green drinks out there, this one actually tastes good. It tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade. It's so good. And since I started drinking Morning Kick, my digestion is smoother and my body looks leaner, and I have energy all day. All day energy, which I need because I have a child, and she's walking now, which means she's running now, which means I need energy. The thing I like most about Morning Kick is how easy it is to make. Just mix with water and stir. Simple. No blenders, no convection ovens, no turning your pantry into a science lab in order to make a SCOBY so you can brew your own probiotic drink. No. All you need to do is have some water and get yourself some Morning Kick, stir it in a glass, and baby, that digestion of yours, smooth. Smooth like silk. And you're going to look good. And you're going to feel good. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself today. All right, let's get back to the show.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
We all watched Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula.
You know, this is actually like accidentally relevant because like Francis Ford Coppola was having like everyone was telling him that his most recent movie that he made, which is like entirely self-financed, was like unreleasable. And, you know, everybody who pays attention to movies is like, it's Francis Ford Coppola. You'd think you could just sell it based on the name alone.
Yeah.
I mean, the same thing's happening to Martin Scorsese, too. And, like, he's much more bankable, I think, these days than Francis Ford Coppola.
That's, you know? Yeah. Crazy.
And he, I mean, he's been making movies that are sort of a loss leader, but I don't think there's, like, anything wrong with that. Like, it's good. Apple gets good press when they waste money, like, you know, quote unquote waste money, like when they spend more than they earn back on like a big budget Martin Scorsese movie.
Right,
like,
right.
That's good for them, broadly speaking, isn't it?
I don't even know.
I have no idea, but it's like, it's, I do feel like I heard recently that there was some ambitious idea he had and had no way of doing it because no one will pay for it. So,
yeah. Well, you just got to find another Malaysian governor, someone who's in charge of the sovereign wealth fund of Malaysia to bankroll it, like they did Wolf of Wall Street.
Is that how?
I hadn't seen.
Wow.
Sorry, go ahead.
I didn't. Is that how Wolf of Wall Street got funded?
Yeah. One MDB. It was like this shady entity that the guy had basically raided the sovereign wealth fund of Malaysia. And yeah, like $100 million of that money went towards making Wolf of Wall Street.
Well, we benefited from it, so I'm happy.
Yeah, 100%. I'm yeah.
Damn. I mean, those it probably robbed a lot of people of their pensions, but like, you know, it started Margot Robbie's career. So who's to say whether it was good or bad?
It all worked out for us, at least.
I'm worried that we only have like 15 minutes before I have to go.
No, that's perfect. It's fine. No one really cares. No one's going to be like, hey, there wasn't enough Dracula talk. And we'll probably continue talking about Dracula after the fact. So we all watched Dracula. First question I have, am I supposed to know who Bram Stoker is? Or is Bram Stoker like just one of the guys who did like some Dracula like novel and it's like, oh no, he's got a specific Dracula that's more fucky.
He's the Dracula guy.
Oh,
he's the guy who wrote the book.
Dracula. Oh, he's the original. He wrote the original Dracula.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He wrote Bram Stoker is the guy who wrote Dracula, the book that all of the subsequent movies and whatnot. Have
okay. So he's like the first Dracula guy. So he invented Dracula's.
Yep.
He invented Dracula. I think that, you know, they were like vampires before him, but he invented Dracula.
Oh, right. Yeah, because those are two different things. See, I'm coming at this movie with almost no knowledge of Dracula.
I can tell.
Like, I know of the concept of a Dracula. I guess Dracula's a guy. Vampire is like what kind is like a species.
Yeah, Dracula is a fella.
Yeah.
And vampire is what type of fella he is.
Okay.
All Draculas are vampires, but not all vampires are Dracula.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So I'm still going to call them Draculas. So
this,
first of all, I did not know. I've never seen this movie. This is one of those movies that's been like highly, you know, like, I don't know, referenced in my life because it just was kind of a meme movie. Like people especially like to bring up the fact that Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves can't do British accents and they spend most of the movie doing terrible ones. So I didn't know this was a Francis Ford Coppola movie until the end when it said directed by Francis Ford Coppola.
Which really? Oh, wow.
That was a great punchline for me. Because I was like, really? Man, he really... I mean, listen, what did you guys think of it? Did you like it? I'll start with you, Alex.
One of the things I know about the movie is that when they made it, they were like, well, we want to do all the effects practically. We want to do everything as though, you know, it's set at the turn of the century, which is right about when movies were invented. We want to make it feel like that.
Yes.
So knowing that, there's a lot of like really great touches, like sort of like rear projection, especially in the opening scenes. There's those big, there's like him fighting a war and there's like little puppets, like little kabuki shadow puppets in the background that are fighting the war. Like that stuff is really cool to me.
Yeah.
But this might be the hottest take I have.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think Francis Ford Coppola is a very good director. I think he just kind of there's no consistency.
Yep.
He doesn't have like a, he doesn't have a style.
Yep.
There's like no consistency to his movies.
Yep.
They can be either great or terrible. And I think a lot of what made his early movies great is just like no one else was up to what he was up to, you know?
Yeah.
Right. Like he's definitely made some masterpieces like The Godfathers and The Conversation. Like he's made some great movies, but but you try to find consistency in his movies and it's hard.
He started making bad movies early too.
In
the early 80s is when he sort of fell off and he was, you know, making movies in the mid 70s. So like it didn't take him long.
I remember seeing Jack, the movie where Robin Williams
is like an overgrown child.
Yeah. And I saw that when I was a kid. And even as a kid, I was like, this movie doesn't quite work. And then finding out that like that was the Godfather guy was jarring, to say the least. But I will say, like Dracula, even when it doesn't like hang together as a story, like it feels cinematic in a way lot of movies don't nowadays. Like you're walking by and it's on, you sort of stop and watch it.
The thing I was thinking the whole time was like, I would be shocked to see Hollywood take a swing like this today.
Yeah,
like,
no chance.
Yeah.
Like this movie is so weird and there's so much of it that's just like weird vaguely sexy montages. Like who would make this movie now? Nobody.
Yeah,
I guess that's why he had to self-fund his movie, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it goes very fast from, you know, like the setup's great. Keanu Reeves is Jonathan Harker, who I guess is like the underling of Renfield at his like financial firm, and he has to go visit the Count Dracula in Romania to like, you know, basically finalize a real estate deal, I guess. Mm-hmm. And like it goes quickly from him being like, oh, this Dracula guy is kind of weird, to smash cut to like, I'm being held in a dungeon
dungeon.
And I'm a sex.
Yeah.
I'm being held in a fuck dungeon with these hot lady vampires.
One of whom is Monica Bellucci, by the way.
Sure is.
Yeah.
Sure is. Memorable. I got to say, Eternal Damnation, Life of Only Drinking Living Blood, worth it. If I got to be with Monica Bellucci for one night.
But one of the things that I was feeling the entire time was just like this movie is so like they've really cranked up the melodrama too,
mm-hmm,
in a way that like I enjoyed.
Yeah.
But I still don't like I enjoyed watching this movie again for the first time since the early 90s. I was really charmed by a lot of the practical effects. And I still found myself being like, it's not a good movie.
Yeah.
But it was an enjoyable movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of the way I feel about it. Like it was, and like my wife sort of, she's like comes into the room and is sort of, you know, she sees me watching movies for my job and podcast all the time. And most of the time she's like on her phone and couldn't care less. But like when this was on, she's kind of like looked up and was like, oh, what is this? Oh, who are these people? Like she was like, it just has the feel of
romance,
like,
novel.
It has a cinematic texture, and like plot wise, it feels very like Italian. Like it feels very like sure. operatic and sort of overwrought in that way, which is not a bad thing. I think it like makes it watchable, even if the story is just a lot in general.
One of the things I learned while I was reading about it, while I was watching it, which is, you know, an unfortunate thing I do instead of just paying attention to the movie.
That's what we all do.
Is that Roman Coppola, his son, did a lot of the, he was like, I don't want to do any digital effects. A company came in and was like, well, here are all the things you want to do. Here are all the digital ways we're going to do it. And he was like, nope, get out of here. My son's going to do it. So he just had his son do all the effects. Oh. And his son now is like a collaborator and partner of Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
Like he helps write all of those Wes Anderson movies. And I can definitely see in that movie, in the movie that we watched, like some very, you know, Wes Anderson has, you know, like in Asteroid City, all of those like rock formations are just like little cutouts he made to make the, to add a little texture to the landscape. And like, I feel like I really got that from the movie. Like there's just like, there's something so charming about that stuff and all the miniatures and the matte paintings. But like, what a mess of a movie.
I mean, it sort of feels like some talent, like a talented filmmaker took Bram Stoker's Dracula and thought like, hey, I could have a lot of fun making this, and did, but never really like questioned like the themes of it or what it meant or like what the story was meant to really convey on a broader sense.
Yeah. If you were to just take that as a question, like what was that movie meant to convey?
I mean, I got from it as someone who didn't even know that Bram Stoker wrote Dracula, and thought that all vampires were Draculas until just a few minutes ago. What I got from it was it's essentially a parable about how good dick will imprison you. And like the way that, you know, Vince's wife react to it, same way my wife reacted to it. Now she had seen it before, but you know, immediately she stopped doing what she was doing to sit and watch a little bit of it, because she was just like, oh yeah, I love this movie, it's so fucking hot. And I was just like, okay, so that's what this movie is essentially about. It's just like, you know, what if you met like a very abusive steampunk vampire, and he wanted to steal you away from your fiance, which I don't know the book, but if the themes are in any way similar, I imagine at the time the book was written, it's about how like women sometimes will, it's kind of like trust no bitch is like what Bram Stoker was trying to say. That's what it felt
there,
like.
I think that there was, when the book was written, and I might be wrong.
Sure.
And again, I got this from reading about it while watching. I was watching it. So apparently there was like a lot of paranoia about the other, about people from other countries.
Sure.
There's a lot of weird sort of nationalism going on in England.
Yeah.
So this blood sucking Eastern European man was really a parable for keep your women away from these swarthy Eastern Europeans.
Yeah, it was
the setup I found.
It feels
very
inherently anti-Semitic. I think we can all say that out loud. Mm-hmm. Like either anti-Semitic or like anti-Roma. Like it's this like, yeah, the Eastern other coming in and taking your women is kind of what it seems like.
I will say like the religious undertone where it was like, okay, Dracula was this badass Romanian knight, back in like the pre-Renaissance, and he went off to go battle the Turkish hordes, and his wife thought he got killed, and so she killed herself, and from then on he renounced Christianity because he was like, oh, this is what I get for defending.
I fought for God.
I fought for God and this is the thanks I get. Like, that was kind of, I don't remember that being like the undertone of most vampire stories, but I thought that was like an interesting
cool backstory. Yeah, it was a cool backstory. But yeah, the movie itself seemed to generally be romance novel style, in my opinion. And, you know, I'm like not against that. I was like, that's fine if the movie is about, you know, fucky sucky, you know, I mean, sucky for sure, because they were sucking blood.
Because there's vampires,
But I did find myself kind of like wanting it to be condensed a little. I was like, we could cut 30 minutes off of this, which is never a good sign when I'm watching a movie. If I'm like, I see ways in which, like, if I'm putting the red slash through the script in my mind while I'm watching, I'm like, okay, so it's not a good movie. But that's, you know,
the time lapse POV shots of Dracula floating around.
Yeah,
I could have done without 95% of those. There were some cool ones.
Yeah,
like there's a great shot where the camera like rolls up to a guy and his eyes get really big, and then you just see his hand flop into frame and blood splatter everywhere. Really good shot. But like,
yeah,
definitely could have missed me with most of that shit.
Right, but like, then there's like certain things like close up on the neck bite from the girl who got bit by the dragon.
Fades into the wolf's eyes.
Yeah, and then just dissolve into wolf's eyes glowing in the moonlight, and I'm just like, I mean, there's just moments of it that felt very Tommy Wiseau, like what if Tommy Wiseau did a Dracula movie? And
is what I mean about Francis Ford Coppola, and after this, unfortunately, I have to jump.
Yeah, totally. Cool.
Yeah, no worries.
The thing that I feel about that movie is like it really demonstrated that he was just like, he's just like, I don't really have like too many of my own ideas, so I'm going to borrow stuff from like everything I've ever seen before and like just throw everything at this movie.
Yes.
And it is bonkers.
Yeah.
But doesn't cohere.
Yes.
Yeah.
I found it entertaining. In the sense that I think it's fun to see a movie about like people who just want to fuck Dracula. but I also found it like at times incoherent, and I was surprised it said Francis Ford Coppola at the end. that's my most of my take on that one.
I would suggest rewatching some of the lesser known Francis Ford Coppola movies, like One from the Heart, which was like a crazy musical he made in the early 80s.
Okay.
That was such a disaster that it ruined him financially after the success of The Outsiders.
Wow.
And it was like a real disaster for him. And like he was paying for it for years, both professionally, like in terms of getting jobs, and financially, because like it really screwed him.
That's crazy. It's crazy to think the guy who made The Godfather could make a movie also so bad it ruins his career.
I know.
It's wild.
I'm sorry, guys. I have to run.
Absolutely.
Oh, good. Thank you for hanging out. We really appreciated having you.
Yeah, my pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
Hell yeah. All right.
Take care.
To finish up our talk.
So yeah, I have a few more thoughts.
Yeah.
One thing is really funny that you have Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder, and they're like, "All right, we're gonna make these people do English accents."
Right.
And then you have Anthony Hopkins and Gary Oldman, and you're like, "All right, well, they're gonna do weird Eastern and Central European accents for the whole movie."
What the fuck?
I always see that, and I'm like, I don't think it'd have been that much of a distraction if they just had Keanu play American.
Yeah.
Like, what? It was 1892 or whatever. America existed.
Yeah, there was an America.
And they had other American characters. It would have been very easy to just have him be an American character.
It was
and you wouldn't
so
even really
wild.
Need to explain it. We would fill in the blanks in our minds. The other thing, I think like the larger problem with this movie is like, I liked that setup where Dracula basically became Dracula because he renounced God because he blamed God for killing his girlfriend.
Sure.
Which makes sense as like a Dracula origin story. But if that's the case, like you kind of want the denouement to revolve around religion in some way. Like he sort of needed to find his peace with God or with Christianity if like that's the entire basis for his being a Dracula, but instead it was just like, dude, this chick is just like so hot that I don't even want to make her a vampire.
Yeah, yeah, yes, yes. And that was...
He also made her best friend a vampire. Like, not... It was hard to figure out the motivation for him making her slutty friend into a slutty vampire.
It is
killing her, which felt like slut shaming.
Yeah, well, I mean, he didn't kill her. They killed her.
Sure, but he could have protected her.
Yeah, he is Dracula. So like that was the weird turn for me, because I thought it was like so clearly like, okay, he is, you know, going to England or wherever the fuck, you know, disguised as his younger, hotter self in order to stalk, you know, Keanu Reeves' fiance, and like get her to fall in love with him. And then he has this turn where it was like me falling in love with you was not part of the plan, but you never really see why that happened.
Yeah, was the plan then? Yeah,
right.
The plan
I don't
had
even
to
know.
Revolve around you being in love.
Yeah, I don't know what the plan is or why. I know that essentially he found a girl who looked exactly like his ex-girlfriend. So, I mean, I get it. But I'm just like, there was just something so strange about it, because I just found myself going like, they're really selling this idea that like, even when Dracula's, you know, even when bad men try to do good, these hoes are out here still trying to cheat, you know?
Yeah. Because
she was just like, no, please, please let me suck your blood and be part of you. And I was just like... This bitch.
Also, the fact that Keanu was stuck in a fuck dungeon with Monica Bellucci for half the movie never really came up with his fiance, who you'd think would have been like, hey, how far did you take it with these vampire hosts?
I don't even fully remember how he got out of the fuck dungeon. How did he get out?
He climbed down the wall. It was very confusing. He climbed out. He was on a ledge, and then the camera... Like, the perspective was weird, so we don't know if he, like, fell down
the
wall. He slid into the water somehow, and
yeah,
he got free of their clutches. Another thing that I thought was a flaw of the film is, like, we see old-ass Dracula.
Right.
Very scary. Old-ass Dracula was, like, nicely creepy. Like, they did
beautiful.
A, they
great
did
job.
A wonderful job, like, making old-ass Dracula look creepy. And then he becomes young Dracula, but, like... Don't we kind of want to see the transition of him like sucking blood and like doesn't he have to suck blood in order to make his appearance like all young and hot again?
I mean, I don't know. It's like they call it Bram Stoker's Dracula, so I assume now that it's like, nah, but this is all canon. So like he just being the
like,
OG Dracula can just look young or turn into rats.
I guess he ate all those dudes on the ship, but like that was sort of...
Yeah.
It was a little up in the air of whether he like ate people and became young, or if he was just using his powers of illusion to trick everyone into thinking that he just looked young and hot, even when he wasn't.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And I don't understand the difference between the two. Like when your powers to also look younger also be, you know, hampered by not having enough fresh blood. Like I wasn't getting too deep into like what are the rules of a Dracula, but
no, I mean it's not that kind of movie and you don't watch it that way for sure.
But there were just a lot of moments where, because I know very little about Dracula's versus werewolves, you know, where I felt like I was like, wait, is he also a werewolf?
And there was a lot of wolves in there.
Yeah, and so because of that, I was
and
just
no
like,
bats really.
There, oh yeah, that's right. At one point, I thought there was going to be bats, but there were rats, and I was like, okay, rats is cool, but I also feel like bats. Him turning into a like a going into the shadows and just turning into a pile of rats. Like I was like, visually that's cool, but it feels like you missed a very obvious opportunity to have him turn into a bunch of bats and fly away. Like I feel like
they
rats
probably just could
you could just step
they probably
on them.
Just couldn't, they probably had a really good rat handler and they could not find a bat guy.
They probably didn't have a good Batman. I mean that's got to be what a bat guy is called, right?
It's they yeah,
gotta,
yeah, it's gotta be.
Sell themselves as a Batman. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, but you know, it was a fun watch. A lot of like nudity, which I always appreciate.
Winona titties. Yeah, and Monica Bellucci titties. It was very like something a little bit for everybody. You know, it was like, here's some titties.
Oh, you think they would have, I mean, they cast Keanu. You think they would have had like more, like at least a Keanu butt shot in there or something. Something for the ladies. Not enough for the ladies.
Yeah. My wife's reaction and your wife's reaction, I think says that the something for the ladies is less about like a visual, like here's a butt shot, and more about like the hot sexy passion of a vampire who turns into a sad boy, you know.
Fuck boy. Yeah,
he's a fuck boy vampire, and he's a
fuck boy and a suck boy.
He's a fuck boy and he's like whatever that vibe is something that I think is, you know, that's how like women get horny. You know, they don't get horny just from seeing a butt, like, if you know, or a hard dick, you know, they get horny from seeing a guy who's like, but I love you too much to hurt you. And then just like, and then they start rubbing their
clits. I was sitting here watching you sleep because you're so interesting.
Yeah, exactly. I could just fall asleep in your arms, you know, and it's just like, it's like,
I mean, we got to talk about the cast. I mean, you had.
Insane cast.
Keanu Reeves. You had Gary Oldman just giving cunt the entire movie.
Serving cunt. He is
so much.
He is so good. And it's like the crazy thing about his career is he's always been good, even in movies that are bad. That's the mark of a great actor, someone who's just like, I'm always gonna be great. I don't care what stupid movie I do.
You had Anthony Hopkins in there who shows up late in the movie. You had Cary Elwes, you had Richard E. Grant in the role. I don't remember who Renfield was. He was good too.
Yeah, the guy really played Renfield. Yeah, he was great. Great Renfield.
But yeah, just a pretty great cast from top to bottom.
Renfeld. Master! Feed me some bugs.
You ever notice when you're eating flies? And,
and the master comes and tells you he needs another child for his sacrifice. Boom, ba-dum, boom, boom, bow. It's just him in Seinfeld's apartment, just luring in girls. And then Dracula just slides in like Kramer.
Yeah, not moving his feet at all. And everybody claps.
I want to see this. Someone make Renfield the Seinfeld parody.
I also feel bad for Keanu Reeves because I think part of the reason that like, Keanu Reeves is a terrible actor became a thing. And listen, he's not great. I don't think people were entirely wrong pointing out that he wasn't a great actor. But I think it also feels like they punked him where they're like, all right, we're going to put you in a movie with like five Oscar winners and you're going to be the main character for some reason.
Yeah, and you're going to be British. You know, guy who has the thickest California accent I've ever heard.
Even though he's Canadian somehow. Yeah, it's like Canadian? They somehow designed he is Canadian.
That's crazy. Why does he sound exactly like a dude, bro? That's nuts. He just was is he from Vancouver at least?
Where is Keanu from?
We gotta find out. We gotta know.
But I mean, you could not design a movie. No, he was raised in Toronto.
None of this makes sense, bro. Go ahead.
You couldn't design a movie like to highlight an actor's flaws better than this one does for Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we're going to do a period piece where he also has an accent and like is not that type at all. And then surround him by like stage veterans of the fucking British theater.
And not only that, but give him a character who doesn't like decide to like man up and take revenge. Like, you know, like none of his strengths. He's playing a little bitch British boy the whole time. Who's like, you know, fucking too scared to fuck Monica Bellucci. and
yeah, he's the main character and he has no agency and no real character arc in the movie.
None,
like,
at all. He learns nothing. It ends with him learning nothing, and it ends with him believing in nothing other than just like, damn, these bitches ain't loyal, you know? And I feel
the most interesting character in it by far is Van Helsing for some reason. It's just like, there's this weird like horn dog like crazy mad scientist character who's Dutch. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, he's the only one who also seems to like understand the comedic sentiments of the movie. Like, or either that or they only gave him funny lines to say.
Yeah.
Because it's like he at different points of the movie actually says some pretty funny shit, you know? It's like,
yeah, well, he's very inappropriate with all the female characters.
He's very he's inappropriate, but he's also saying shit like, you know, I forget what it was like. Were they in pain? It was like, yes, tremendous amounts of pain. And then we stabbed her in the heart and cut her head off. And they're like, doctor, like that shit was hilarious. And he like, I don't know. It felt almost like not the movie. And I was kind of grateful for it. I was like,
But you kind of want it to be the movie a little bit.
Right. Yeah. I was like, yeah, more of this. And that's the thing. I respect the idea of doing like a serious adaptation of Dracula and trying to make it like modern and good. And not modern in terms of setting, but in terms of like, you know, technology and making it not look like a 1922 black and white Nosferatu-esque movie. And trying to not make it a 1950s, you know, Dracula wearing a suit and the, you know, fucking I want to suck your blood. You know, it wasn't that.
Right.
So yeah. I respect it taking itself seriously. But there's also like, you know, a lot of titties. And so it's like, I don't know. Have fun, guys. it felt like no one was having fun, and including like the director.
I thought he was having fun staging his little scenes.
He was probably having fun. You see, on that level that Alex was talking about of the practical effects, I could see enjoying the movie and seeing where the fun was being had. But for me, as someone who just kind of came into it completely blind, all I could see was an incredibly incoherent story that mixed like old horror films and romance novels. And I was like, I'm not against this, but it doesn't work. It just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, you know, for people who didn't buy this one necessarily, Robert Eggers is doing a Nosferatu remake that,
oh shit,
they just released a trailer for.
See, that I would see.
That feels like the vampire movie that I want to see.
Well, I haven't seen the trailer. Can I watch it right here with you?
Sure, why not?
Yes, I can. Now you will only be able to hear the audio, but you've already seen it. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, I saw.
Okay, so I'm gonna watch it, and we're gonna listen to it together. I didn't know, and this is the same guy who did the Witch, right?
Yeah, The Witch and The Lighthouse and The Northman.
Oh God, just nothing but bangers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Robert Eggers. All right, here he is. I call him Robert Eggers. All right, Nosferatu. Here's the trailer.
Come to me.
Oh.
Come to me.
Yeah, come.
Hit my cola.
Yeah.
Come to
me. Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. All right. Shot of like Transylvania. Oh, someone riding a horse.
My dreams, Kartok.
Guy running with a top hat. Old London Street, cobblestones. Oh shit! It's the homie Willem Dafoe. Okay. Carriage going to a castle, Transylvanian. Oh. Oh shit! Naked woman masturbating by candlelight. Oh, rats in a cobblestone street. Oh, that guy just ate a bird.
coming.
Funeral.
Who is coming to my child?
Oh, people holding torches. Oh, Bene Gesserit. Oh shit, we're in a graveyard again. Oh, woman tearing off her blouse. Children screaming, woman vomiting blood. Hot girl doing hot stuff. Slow turn on a guy.
We are here encountering the vampire.
The vampire, all right. All right, silhouetted guy.
Nosferatu.
Yeah, Nosferatu. Oh, goth font. I love goth font. Goth font! Goth font! Oh, it's coming out on Christmas. Succumb to Darkness Christmas 2020. Christmas 2024. Succumb to Darkness.
Yeah.
That looks pretty good, man.
I mean, how could it not be? I mean, they put Lily Rose Depp in it, which I could probably do without.
Is that who I was seeing? I was like, oh, that girl's hot. Okay. Listen,
you should watch, what was the HBO show? The Idol. Just keep watching of that.
I've seen all that.
You're going to see plenty of her in that.
Yeah. I like when she's masturbating or sucking dick or whatever. That looks great. And also, you know, again, that's a director who has like a style and a thing he does, you know? He's a very specific thing. It's not going to work for fucking any type of content. He couldn't make Jack. And I feel like this is the thing with Francis Ford Coppola, is that just there's never, you know, it's like what Alex was saying, there's no consistency in like what kind of filmmaking he does, you know. He just kind of
lucked out a few times. Some people can pull off that kind of variety in their career, like George Miller doing the Mad Max movies, but also Babe 2, Pig in the City, and Happy Feet.
Absolutely. Some people can do it. Some people can't do it. But I will say, if it's got Willem Dafoe, I'm there pretty much always and forever.
That's right.
So good. I finally started watching Little One, or Poor One. Poor Ones? Poor Things.
Poor Things.
Poor Things. There we go. I got the title.
I loved it.
I am fucking loving it. I haven't finished it yet, but
I like that Yorgos finally made just like an extended fart joke as a movie, and I'm into it. I think comedy is his strong suit.
He's great. He's great at comedy, and like, you know, again, it's got titties, it's got farts, it's got Willem Dafoe, pretty much everything I've ever wanted in a movie. So let's hope Nosferatu got farts. So solid B+. I give Dracula. Yeah. Have you ever seen Dracula Dead and Loving It?
I don't think I did. That's Leslie Nielsen, right?
Yeah, it's actually a Mel Brooks movie. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It was in his like
that makes sense.
What do you call it era?
Flop?
Yeah, but like his flop, but like unfair to call it a flop era, because like
Mel Brooks,
he came out with bangers still. Like Men in Tights is still a banger. It just like not considered, you know, Young Frankenstein or The Producers or Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, but I think Mel Brooks is sort of like the Woody Allen of comedy. Like he's just gonna keep making them no matter what happens.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever reached the heights of like vintage Zucker Brothers, but
certainly not.
I like a lot of his movies.
Yeah, I think that's the problem is that like when you compare to the Zucker Brothers, which a lot of is like Leslie Nielsen being in Dracula Dead and Loving It made it feel like it was a Zucker Brothers movie. You know, the same thing with Spaceballs, where, you know, it's like it's got this Zucker Brothers feel to it, but it's Mel Brooks and it's not exactly the same in terms of like Zucker Brothers.
He's way zanier than they are.
Yeah.
More like more theatrical, where they're more deadpan.
Yes. But anyways, Dracula Dead and Loving It. Is actually great, and you know, people should check that out.
Subject for a future pod, perhaps.
Absolutely. We're doing Dracula July. I don't know. Dracula June or something. Dracula June. That kind of works. Anyways, thank you to our guests, Alex Goldman, the golden man of podcasting. Listen to Western Kabuki wherever you get your podcasts, and whatever his new thing that's coming out, I bet it's dope. Patreon.com/Fraudcast, Fraudcast@gmail.com. Vince, what is a Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right. Before we go, I will say to you, Vince, and to everyone, we are going to pick our next show for Pod Yourself very soon. What do you
oh, good. Finally.
What do you think? Next week we'll announce sure. what we're picking?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll say that. Next week we are announcing what we're picking. Thank you to all you patient piggies out there. Because, you know, obviously we've all had we've all been very busy for the last few months. And, you know, we're all just trying to, you know, make our lives less like hell. So we haven't had a chance to really hunker down. But we have now, and we will tell you our decision next week.
We'll be hunkering. Can I do one more piece of news before we go?
Yes. Oh, sure. Yes.
This is just a tweet that I scrolled by. Netflix aggressively pushed for Richard Gadd to cast Melissa McCarthy as Martha for Baby Reindeer. McCarthy met Gadd about the role, but ultimately wasn't interested. Have you seen Baby Reindeer?
I have seen it. I have seen it.
Can you imagine that? 100%. As a Melissa McCarthy project?
I mean, the thing is that what they got was Scottish Melissa McCarthy, but... I don't see it working with Melissa McCarthy because
no, not at all.
Because it's a little
too
dark.
Yeah, exactly.
Would
have felt like a comedy show that failed to do darkness rather than like a dark show that was like weirdly funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah, so there will be a decision. You will hear what the next show is, and it's going to be a great one. You all know it's going to be great. All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening, and until next time, good night and good chins.
Oh. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable.